invited to pull up a chair on Lisa Harper's Back Porch, where faith meets real life. Welcome to Back Porch Theology. Each episode helps you dive deeper into God's Word and discover that the gospel isn't just good news for eternity. It's great news for everyday life, because God is for you, and He's always been restoring our value and drawing us closer to Him. With honest conversations, a few laughs, and guests ranging from close friends to brilliant theologians, Back Porch Theology is thoughtful, meaningful, and never stuffy. So grab some coffee or sweet tea and join Lisa Harper on Back Porch Theology. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Mark Morano's a man, a former senior staff member of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, publisher of ClimateDepot.com, author of the book that is timeless. It's called The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. Hey, Mark, welcome back to the show. How you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Joe. Appreciate it.
Always appreciate it, man. Tell us about the President's Ratepayer Protection Pledge. This is a big meeting about energy, and walk us through this. All good things, Mark Morano, huh?
Yeah, this is huge in the Trump world. I mean, this is huge for America, because I got to tell you, I might be an outlier, but I'm not rah-rah all these data centers. I live in Virginia, which is home to the most data centers. I live in Northern Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C. We are just filled with Soviet-style data centers. As far as the eye can see, windowless buildings that look like, you know, Joseph Stalin was still ahead of it in the 1950s. They are really ugly. Zapping energy, raising utility rates, and so what Donald Trump is doing now is brilliant, because he said enough. And this is a battle all states. It's not only is it not in my backyard, because of the ugly architecture, but it is. It's, you know, it consumes. You're using more energy for many of these than entire nations do for all these data centers. Now, having said all that, with Donald Trump, he announced it in the State of the Union. He had a big meeting yesterday with Amazon, Google, Meta, Microsoft, OpenAI, Oracle, and several others. And the idea is they're going to start paying for their own energy use, and they're going to have they're going to build their own generation sources. They're going to cover the cost of all the power delivery, the infrastructure, because it's amazing. Because what's happened, I live in Northern Virginia. We have politicians who run and campaign on stopping this because of the prices and the impact. And every single time they're passed, no matter how many hearings, no matter how many speeches, the data centers know how to, you know, they know how to grease the local politicians to make this happen. So that's why you need Donald Trump intervening here, because there's just basically at any local level, they can buy off every politician and not let this happen. Trump is forcing their hand. This is the greatest thing that can happen. Now, AI is a double-edged sword. The best aspect so far of AI, Joe, and this is huge, Larry Fink, the head of BlackRock, now the current head of the World Economic Forum, has publicly announced that solar and wind can't power AI. We need fossil fuels and nuclear. You now have Bill Gates backing off climate alarmism, saying climate's not a catastrophe. You have Jeff Bezos now, the Washington Post editorial board, you know, praising Trump, pulling out of the endangerment finding, saying CO2 is not pollution. You have them trashing Joe Biden, EV mandates, the Green New Deal. All these billionaires have turned against the green agenda, the climate agenda. That's the best vision here, and they've exposed solar and wind. So if Trump can pull this off, this will be a huge thing, because no longer will especially Americans in states like Virginia and others have to fear AI or technology when it comes to zapping all their energy.
Yeah, it is. It's genius on behalf of the administration and the president. But my worry is, as we get excited about it, if it looks like he could, you know, in three more years, you know, whether it's Marco or JD, you could hold on. But if you lose the White House, do you think they'll go right back to that ridiculous, because the ridiculousness of you and I always talking about the wind turbines and all of that? I know the governor, the current governor of New Jersey, she's just chomping at the bit to do that. I could just feel it. I mean, they'll go back in a second, right?
Yeah, to answer your question, absolutely yes. They will go back. I'm in Virginia. We have Democrat Governor Spanberger just took over for the Republican. One of her first actions, we're now in the regional greenhouse gas initiative. The earth is smiling this morning because Virginia is now fighting climate change. All it means for the affordability agenda is higher rates for us. And what Trump has done, like, you know, you have this Iran war, which is happening. If we didn't have what Donald Trump has done, over 300 actions in 1 year, And even CNN is admitting this now, that Donald Trump's actions have, Donald Trump, essentially this energy dominance in our oil, have producing more oil than any, this is CNN, the United States is producing more oil than any country in the history of the planet, and the U.S. oil boom has prevented even bigger price increases that would have happened due to the Iran war. So I'm not saying war is great for energy prices. This is potentially a disaster. It depends on the intensity and the length and the scope. But we are never, as I said recently, we are better prepared for a Middle Eastern war than we have been in 50 years. We have more oil and gas production than Russia and Saudi Arabia combined, more natural gas production than Saudi Arabia, China, other nations combined. So we are in that positioning. However, gas prices at the pump are going up, price per barrel is going up. The thing we have to do is get this buttoned up and finished, because no matter how much energy we produce, when you have a global impact with the Strait of Hormuz and all these tankers, we have a problem. So the goal is weeks, not months, to get this wrapped up if we're to avoid any major energy nightmare, which then affects the economy. So we're in a very precarious position, but we are well positioned. Best position we've had been. I'm not saying war is good, but this is the best case scenario in terms of energy impact we could have.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Hey, Mark, walk us through, while we have you, AI. When they say AI, what do you think of? Robots? I mean, every time I see AI and Elon he tweets out something on X and it's like robots. I mean, what's AI? I mean, I guess it covers such a vast array of energy, correct?
It does, yeah. Well, there's the energy aspect, the data centers, the zapping all the energy. And here's what's interesting about it. I'm a skeptic about the energy demands of this, meaning I'm sure they need this kind of demand right now for AI, but you go 10 years, 15 years from now, do you think all these Soviet-style ugly buildings are going to still be necessary? Or are they going to be abandoned? We already had a Chinese startup, I guess it was last spring of 2025, claim that they can do it, I think, on one-tenth of the energy to power their AI demand. So my point is, if AI is so smart, as everyone claims it is, and the U.S. military is touting it, how they're using it to take out Iranian positions and different targets, that it's going to figure out a way to use a lot less energy. AI will solve its own biggest problem, I think that's going to be down the line. So I think we're going to end up with a lot of abandoned, ugly architecture. Now, that's point one. Point two, and this is the really dark side.
Yeah.
Yuval Harari, a key advisor to the World Economic Forum, I wrote about this in my book, The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. I talked about this when I was in Davos this year at the World Economic Forum meeting. Praised AI because he believes it's going to end up with useless eaters, and we're going to have basically mass unemployment, and we're going to have to give the unemployed masses out there psychotropic drugs and get addicted to video games to occupy us, because we'll have nothing else to do. This is the dangerous side of AI, and they're talking about just taking away jobs, not just jobs like factory jobs. We've already dealt with that the last 30 years, but they're talking about going after accounting, lawyers, you name it, all the professional classes. This has the potential to have a very disruptive effect. So it's obviously a double-edged sword. Plus, you have the surveillance state. There are people saying now that you can have instead of Epstein Island, you can have a digital AI-fueled Epstein, where essentially everything you've done, everything you've liked, every web browser, and that's how they can blackmail you. You won't need an island to have to fly to. So the negative side. The positive side is, I'm actually struggling to find a lot of positive sides at the moment.
I'm telling you, what they could do is if you go and you go to like a great a university or something, and they have like a medical center there, and there's a disease, a multiple sclerosis or cancer, whatever it is. And you have all the human brilliant minds. Once they put it into some kind of AI, computer or AI, just in some kind of AI setup, that's what they think. That's how they think they're going to cure cancer.
I'm being facetious. Yeah, there's all those kind of benefits. And I can tell you, I have four kids. It's revolutionized classroom school kids. They can write papers now in minutes. They could. I'm being half again facetious here, but believe me, kids are using this AI technology for research papers. Not just kids, but other people. I mean, it's amazing just the different aspects. Just this way they can summarize an issue in a paragraph within seconds, do complex mathematical and scientific equations. So yeah, there's a lot here, but it's also very dangerous.
Yeah. Well, keep us posted, Mark. Love your energy, man. Love that you're on top of this. And we but keep going. ClimateDepot.com. He is the man, Mark Morano. Thank you, Mark. God bless. Come back when you can.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mark Morano right there. Really great take on everything and a very honest outlook. You know, you don't get propaganda. And if Mark isn't in there fighting and Donald Trump's not in there fighting imagine what went on when Biden was in office.
You're invited to pull up a chair on Lisa Harper's Back Porch, where faith meets real life. Welcome to Back Porch Theology. Each episode helps you dive deeper into God's word and discover that the gospel isn't just good news for eternity. It's great news for everyday life because God is for you, and he's always been restoring our value and drawing us closer to him. With honest conversations, a few laughs, and guests ranging from close friends to brilliant theologians, Back Porch Theology is thoughtful, meaningful, and never stuffy. So grab some coffee or sweet tea and join Lisa Harper on Back Porch Theology. Subscribe now wherever you listen to podcasts.